good evening, everyone. This is Lou Caverly speaking for the Divided Kingdom. And I'm going to lead off tonight with a little something about Social Security. Those of us who are over a certain age are pretty interested in that. And this is from the Gateway Pundit by Jim Hoft, March the 25th, 2025. The headline, Doge Overhauls Social Security. 7 million immortal number holders, ages 120 plus, finally marked as deceased in massive cleanup effort. The Department of Government Efficiency, known as DOGE, has launched an unprecedented cleanup operation targeting jaw-dropping irregularities in the U.S. Social Security database. Over 7 million supposed number holders, ages 120 and older, have now been officially marked as deceased. The official DOGE X account announced, quote, for the past 3 weeks, Social Security has been executing a major cleanup of their records. Approximately 7 million number holders, all listed ages 120 and above, have now been marked as deceased. Another approximately 5 million still to go. And we have on the website I just mentioned, I'll mention it again in a few minutes, we have a chart that shows, according to age groups, how many have been taken care of now. Now, I will just mention something here. How has this happened? You know, for the ordinary law-abiding citizen like me, like my wife, my late wife, Phoebe Elizabeth, it didn't take long for them to decide that she was not going to get Social Security. She died 6 weeks ago. And within 10 days, probably less, I didn't actually check the date, they had sent me either a letter or an email, I can't remember which, stating that they had taken back the money that had been put into our joint checking account for her Social Security. And it didn't take them very long. And there was no question that I had to do anything. I thought, being a law-abiding citizen, I would have to call them up or write them a letter or do something, visit their office in nearby Salisbury, Maryland, actually in Cambridge, Maryland, even closer. I thought I'd have to tell them, you know, my wife is no longer living, so she needs to be taken off the rolls. Well, that wasn't necessary. I don't know how they did it, but they very quickly found out she was dead, and they withdrew February's Social Security from my account, which I thought was a low blow because she was alive for half the month. I think I would have thought they'd leave half of the month's allotment in there. But no, they took the whole thing out. Well, you can't fight City Hall. But you see, for the ordinary citizen like me, there was no question about mistakes. They just took action, and it was all done. However, some of these people, they must not have gotten word. And it's not like a few. It's like 7 million. 7 million people who have been dead for who knows how long, since their ages are, in some cases, now I can't believe this, and I doubt that many of you can either. In this chart, on the second page of their website, at least in the printed copy of the website, it says the age group 150 to 159. Now, I hardly think there's anybody alive in the entire world that age. But they had a count of over a million people, if I'm reading that chart correctly, in that age group, who were still getting Social Security. 150 years old. Has the system even been around that long? I don't know. I think since 1935, maybe, something like that. Well, anyway, that gives you a little idea of what that's about. I won't bore you with endless details, but if you want to see the details, there's a couple of very good charts running really pretty much two pages on this website. And again, the website that you can go to if you want this information, and it's broken down into different age groups, is the Gateway Pundit. The date was March the 25th, 2025, and the rough headline read, Doge Overhauls Social Security. So if you're interested, it shouldn't be too hard to find that. And you can look at the data in much more detail, but it would get a little boring just to read endless facts. All right, let's move on to Zero Hedge. The Zero Hedge website says, new German government wants to ban, quote, lies, unquote. This is by Tyler Durden. Saturday, March 29th, 2025, via Remix, R-E-M-I-X, News. The new German government coalition, which is likely to be the Christian Democrats, CDU, and the Social Democrats, SPD, is looking to ban lies, in quotation marks. According to a working paper that emerged from the group Culture and Media between the two parties, BILD, Bild newspaper, received a copy of the working paper, which outlines the goal of combating fake news on social media, including restrictions on it. The paper from the CDU and SPD, again, that's the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrat parties, indicates that, quote, disinformation and fake news, unquote, threaten democracy. In fact, the paper argues that freedom of expression does not apply in such circumstances. Bild contacted a number of constitutional lawyers, and they are highly skeptical of this law. Quote, lies are only prohibited if they are punishable. For example, in the case of sedition. Otherwise, you can lie, said Volker von Nessler, a professor at the University of Oldenburg. Even determining a lie is a legal complexity. He added, quote, it is not an easy question of what a factual claim and what an expression of opinion is. Most courts interpret freedom of expression very broadly, unquote. He also took aim at a specific part of the working paper which addresses, quote, hate and agitation. He said, hate and agitation? Those are no legal terms. He added, basically, the spread of hatred in Germany is protected by freedom of expression. An assertion like, I hate all politicians, does not yet constitute a criminal offense, unquote. Another law professor from the University of Augsburg, Joseph Franz Lindner, said that the, quote, deliberate spreading of false facts is not punishable, not illegal, unquote. He said that if the new government moves forward with a law against fake news, it would represent a grave threat to freedom of speech. He said he can only warn against a fake news offense being created, saying, ultimately, it would expose any controversial statement to the risk of criminal prosecution, unquote. It's also worth noting that Friedrich Merz himself, who is likely to be Germany's next chancellor, openly lied when he said that his party would support an end to the debt brake. Almost immediately after the election, he said the debt brake would be lifted and that Germany would take on historic amounts of debt. Lawyer Joachim Steinhoffel, who has a broad range of clients related to internet censorship, says the CDU and SPD's goal with a new paper is to, quote, intimidate the unpopular social media, quote, unquote, content producers. He said that such censorship already lacks a constitutional basis. Well, again, that was from Zero Hedge, authored by Tyler Durden, Saturday, March 29th. Headline, new German government wants to ban lies. Well, I think all governments would like to ban whatever they don't like the sound of, including our own government, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. And there have been attempts over the centuries to try and do that with just our government, with many, many governments, to try to ban what they don't like. but fortunately, those have usually been overturned by the courts. Now from Fox News, something that hits very close to a lot of us. Utah bans fluoride from public drinking water, aligning with MEHA movement. And we'll see what that MEHA movement is in just a few seconds. This is by Michael Dorgan at Fox News, published March 29th, 2025. Now, here we have this. I'm just interjecting myself now before I get to the article. I can remember various people in my little hometown when I was probably 10 years old or younger debating this very thing. Should the little town put fluoride in its drinking water? The little town had well water for the whole town, so it was pretty good water. Not like some of these that is, you know, pulled out of rivers that are probably highly contaminated and treated with a whole bunch of chlorine. So we never had to contend with the chlorine in my hometown in Massachusetts. But they did put fluoride in, I'm quite sure. I remember my little hometown dentist was all for it. He thought it fought tooth decay. And being a dentist, that was one of his chief interests. But others thought, I'm not so sure about that. And down to this day, now we're talking a good 60 years, maybe even closer to 70 years later, it's still being debated. It's never been settled. So it says, Utah has become the first state in the U.S. to ban adding fluoride to its public drinking water systems as concerns about the decades-long practice continue to grow, fueled in part by the Make America Healthy Again, or MAHA, MAHA movement. Republican Governor Spencer Cox signed legislation Thursday that bars cities and communities from deciding whether to add the chemical to their water systems. The bill was passed by the legislature last month, and it is set to go into effect on May 7th of this year. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that fluoride strengthens teeth and reduces cavities by replacing minerals lost during normal wear and tear. Utah Governor Spencer Cox compared fluoride to being, quote-unquote, medicated by the government. Critics, however, have long said that washing teeth with fluoride is not comparable to the risk posed by the ingesting fluoride, with the latter potentially triggering harmful neurotoxic effects. The fluoride used in public systems, and this is Lou interjecting now, this is something I think I may have heard Elizabeth talk about some time back. Elizabeth was very conscious of all kinds of health things, and although she has now passed from this life, I will say up until the last month or two of her life, she was in quite good health. She took no prescription drugs whatsoever. And I don't think there are too many people her age, and she died at age 83, although you would never have known it to meet her. She didn't talk like an 83-year-old. She didn't look like an 83-year-old. So she must have been doing something right. And finally, I think it was her heart that finally gave out. But the rest of her body, I think, was still in pretty good shape. Getting back to this now, the fluoride used in public systems is typically not naturally occurring fluoride, and is instead sourced from the phosphate fertilizer industry, where it's captured during processing to prevent environmental emissions. And again, I'll interject here, so it sounds like they want to protect the environment, so they don't mind giving all of us in the water system ministering things that could be potentially harmful. It's just a matter of convenience, in other words. Now, getting back to the article, Utah lawmakers who pushed for a ban said putting fluoride in water was too expensive and didn't improve dental health. Cox, who grew up and raised his own children in a community without fluoridation, compared it recently to being medicated by the government. Bill's sponsor, Representative Stephanie Grisius, a Republican, told Fox News Digital in January that she had been working on the bill since earlier last year, noting that fluoride is federally regulated as a prescription. She said community water fluoridation and informed consent, which is foundational to good health care, cannot coexist. I believe strongly in individual choice when it comes to what prescriptions we put into our bodies. She said only two of Utah's 29 counties practice community water fluoridation. And with a sample size of more than 70,000 children, researchers found there was no significant difference on children's dental decay between counties that add fluoride and those that do not. And she added, quote, in fact, the county with the lowest amount of decay does not add fluoride, unquote. On the other hand, the American Dental Association sharply criticized Cox and Utah lawmakers, saying the ban showed, quote, wanton disregard for the oral health and well-being of their constituents, unquote. The group said that cavities are the most common chronic childhood disease. Well, again, this is Luke. That might be true. They noticed they didn't address any statistics that show that fluoride really does improve dental health. I'll also add, before I get back to the article, that one of our nearby towns, and I think Elizabeth may have brought this up at some point in the past on this program, one of the nearby towns, the town of Easton, which is only 10 miles from my home on the eastern shore of Maryland, one of the dentists wrote in saying that so much fluoride was being put into the water that it was actually harming the teeth. I wish I had saved that, and if I can come across something pertaining to that, I'll put it in the program in the future. And finishing up this article, Health and Human Services, HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., vowed in November to outlaw the practice nationwide. RFK Jr. wrote in a post on X in November, quote, fluoride is an industrial waste associated with arthritis, bone fractures, bone cancer, IQ loss, neurodevelopmental disorders, and thyroid disease. Mr. Kennedy, who is seen as the father of the MAHA, remember that's the Make America Healthy Again movement, since he endorsed President Trump's presidential campaign in July, aims to improve nutrition, eliminate toxins, preserve natural habitats, and fight the chronic disease epidemic in this country. If Kennedy were to end the practice, it would overturn a policy first enacted 80 years ago when Grand Rapids, Michigan became the first city in the world to fluoridate its water supply. Currently, more than 200 million Americans, or about 75% of the population, drink fluoridated water. In September, a judge in California ordered the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, to further regulate fluoride because high levels could pose, quote, an unreasonable risk to the intellectual development of children. Indeed, and this is the judge's words, EPA's own expert agrees that fluoride is hazardous at some levels of exposure. And ample evidence establishes that a mother's exposure to fluoride during pregnancy is associated with IQ decrements in her offspring. So, once again, that is from Fox News by Michael Dorgan, March 29th, 2025. And the headline read, Utah bans fluoride from public drinking water. And I should mention, so no one thinks I'm being hypocritical, that the water that Elizabeth and I drank here, and I continue to drink, is from our own well. We're out in the country. We don't get city water anyway. So there's no fluoride, unless it's naturally occurring, in tiny trace amounts in our water. Now, let's go to the movies. From LifeSite News, Disney's new Snow White review says, a woke, nonsensical mess of a movie. This is by Tim Young, Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. And they had excerpted this from the Daily Signal. And the author of this review says, I expected Disney's new Snow White live-action film to be woke. But what I was ultimately shocked by was how much of a complete nonsensical mess it was. Prepare yourself for spoilers of a film you're never going to want to see. My review will be similar to what I just watched, full of non-sequiturs. I'm truly baffled as to where to begin, other than by saying that this was awful. Before I dive further in, I would like to apologize to not only the readers, but the editors of this article for my retelling of the plot that sounds like a child making up a story as they go by, loudly adding, and then to add plot points. What very clearly happened to making this film was that Disney freaked out by the reaction to the set leaks of the Snow White Seven Woke Companions, and freaked out by the reaction to lead actress Rachel Zegler's calling the prince a stalker, sent this film back to the drawing board and ordered as much of the original story to be cut and pasted in as possible. Watching the film, it seems as though the seven dwarfs were never supposed to be in it. The seven woke companions pop up out of nowhere to fight soldiers with essentially just their bare hands. They also have two dance scenes with the dwarfs where it looks like the dwarfs were an afterthought in the middle and at the end. Two of the woke companions, a tall black woman and a white little person, fall in love, which is never explained. They just dance together in the first dance scene near the middle of the film, and then they're in love in the last scene of the film. They really don't show up at any other part in the film other than when the little person shoots an arrow at the evil queen, played by Gal Gadot, saving Snow White from getting stabbed at the end of the film. The film begins by explaining that Snow White's name comes from her being born in a snowstorm, not her skin color. They had to knock that part of the lore out as quickly as possible. She lives in a paradise-like kingdom where everyone shares food and apparently doesn't need currency. Skipping past the part where Snow White's mother dies and the evil queen takes over, we meet Snow White's love interest, Jonathan, played by Andrew Branagh. He steals food to help the poor in town, but gets caught and sentenced to death by freezing on the gates of the castle. But Snow White saves him because of women's empowerment. This is all within about the first 15 minutes of the film. The story then kind of goes along with the original. Mara Mara, chased into the woods, cute songs by the dwarves. Evil Queen shows up with a poisoned apple. This is all interspersed with a nonsense fight scene with the seven woke companions and one dance scene. They just kind of pop up and disappear at random. Contrary to what Zegler implied in her previous interviews, Snow White does get saved by Jonathan when he kisses her in the woods, in what seems like one of many scenes shoehorned in to try to appease normal audiences. But then Snow White returns to town to perform a TEMU version of Les Miserables. Do you hear the people sing? And confront the evil queen. Without giving too much of the nonsense away, the evil queen orders Snow White to be executed in front of the townspeople choir by one of her royal guards, but he's about to stab her. Snow White says, your name is Paul. And that's that. Snow White then names the other people and their job titles, and that turns the evil queen's entire army against her. The queen then takes matters into her own hands and tries to stab Snow White, but is shot by the little person of the seven bizarre human baristas. Then, as previously explained, they all dance again at what appears to be a wedding. But it isn't. And it's over. I can understand if a film is woke and well done, but it becomes very clear in the first 15 minutes that this was initially woke, then chopped into a million pieces and reassembled with the original story to make what will be one of, if not Disney's biggest box office flops ever. It's important to note that I was one of seven people in the 145-person theater to see this film on the day it was released. Four of the people were wearing masks. What was wrong with re-recording some songs and rehearsing the original? That would have gone over pretty well, and actually might have turned a profit. This was reprinted with permission from the Daily Signal. Again, that was from LifeSite News by Tim Young, Tuesday, March 25th. The headline read, Disney's new Snow White review, a woke, nonsensical mess of a movie. And this is Lou speaking, just a couple other things before we leave that. Another reviewer, Wendy Ide in The Guardian, on March 23rd, states that the, quote, deafening anti-buzz surrounding Disney's latest live-action remake of the 1937 title Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is not only justified, that is, the deafening anti-buzz is not only justified, it actually underestimated just how toe-curlingly terrible the film would turn out to be, unquote. She goes on to call it a, quote, bamboo splinters under the fingernails viewing experience, unquote. And, again, that was from Wendy Ide in The Guardian, March 23rd. And the movie has flopped at the box office, as predicted. It earned a dismal $43 million domestically and just $87 million globally. That's dollars. $43 million and $87 million in its opening weekend, after reportedly costing at least $350 million to make and market. And that according to Vanity Fair. All right, now, something to do with the JFK. A lot of files have been released in the last few weeks. I haven't heard any real blockbuster statements, but there have been some insinuations. And here we have something from Fox News. I have at the top Fox News. Now, I'm questioning that because it has Jim Hoft as the author. He's usually at the Gateway Pundit. So I'm not quite sure about that. It's one or the other. And the headline reads, Breaking. Representative Anna Paulina Lunar accuses NBC of withholding a bombshell video showing Lee Harvey Oswald near the JFK limo, claims he wasn't the shooter. Again, the author was Jim Hoft, March 28th, 2025. Chairwoman of the Task Force on the Declassification of Federal Secrets, Representative Anna Paulina Lunar, Republican of Florida, has publicly accused NBC of withholding critical evidence in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. During a recent interview on Fox News, Representative Lunar claimed that an unreleased video, which allegedly depicts Lee Harvey Oswald away from the infamous Texas School Book Depository at the time of Kennedy's assassination, is in possession of NBC News. According to Representative Lunar, this video shows Oswald near JFK's limousine when the shots were fired in Dallas, a claim that, if verified, would make it physically impossible for him to have been the shooter from the sixth floor of the depository. The congresswoman mentioned plans to formally request this footage from NBC, stressing the importance of transparency and accountability in this long-standing national ministry. Here's a little transcript of what she said. So Anna Paulina Lunar said, I would like to actually tell the American people it was made aware to me this evening that NBC actually has a video that's never been seen before. We're actually going to send a letter requesting that NBC, or requesting that, I assume she means the video itself, from NBC, because it allegedly shows Oswald near the vehicle when the assassination took place, which means that he couldn't have been the shooter. So again, we're tracking down all this information. But look, there's even a CIA document that came out that Mr. Morley pointed out that actually said that the CIA never bought the lone gunman theory. That is to say, never accepted it. And so I think the American people had an inclination as to what we are saying, but we never had the hard evidence until now. It's important to note that in a free and fair society, how could you operate or have an agency operating in the shadows? Kudos to President Trump, also Director Radcliffe, and Tulsi Gabbard for pushing for this transparency. It is going to be generational changing that they've done this. We hope to bring forward the legislation, too, to ensure that this never happens again for future generations to come. So those are the words of Anna Paulina Luna. Now, Jesse Waters says, you're saying NBC has been keeping this tape of Oswald under wraps? And Anna Paulina Luna says, correct. In fact, Director Stone actually told us, and I assume this is Lou speaking now, Director Stone would probably the director of the movie JFK. Director Stone actually, going on now, in fact, Director Stone actually told us that he showed this tape. I think she means he was shown this tape, that it was a secondary copy, and that he said this could blow open the entire JFK investigation. What I will also tell you, though, Jesse, is he said that NBC has been very, very much guiding this tape. I believe that that tape belongs to the American people. We are going to be sending a letter asking for that tape, and I would encourage everyone to ask NBC to release that tape to the public. It is important not just for our investigations, but so the American people know the truth as to what happened with John F. Kennedy. All right. And then Jesse Waters says, well, I think they will release it because I believe the president will probably put it on True Social pretty soon. All right, Congressman Anna Paulina Luna. And she replies, hopefully Fox will promote it. And as I've said before, this is something I've looked into quite a lot, read a lot about it. The assassination of John F. Kennedy. I was a student in school when it happened, and I remember that day as vividly as one can possibly remember much of anything. I would agree, if they do have such a tape, it is completely revising what most of the history books put out. Most history books that our children are being fed claim that Lee Harvey Oswald was in the sixth floor, southeast corner window of the Texas School Book Depository, that he fired all the shots, that he had no help from anyone, no encouragement from anyone. He acted entirely on his own for no known motive. Now, from the first day, there have been people who questioned that. It took me a long time to really look into it at all, but by the time the middle 1970s rolled around, I too was one of the skeptics, and am to this day. And what she says is true. If Oswald was on the ground, there's no way he could have been firing those shots. And to this day, there is some dispute. Were the shots all even fired from that window in the Texas School Book Depository? There are many pieces of evidence that seem to indicate that was planted, that Oswald was not there, and in fact, nobody was firing from there, that the firing was coming from the grassy knoll up ahead and to the right of the limousine, and probably from one of the other buildings, or possibly one of the other floors of the Texas School Depository, one of the other buildings behind the Del Tex building, the County Records building, or one of various other buildings in Dealey Plaza behind the limousine at the time of the shooting. So, we shall see. I do have some skepticism because it's hard to keep something like this hidden all these years. It's going to be 63 years this November since Kennedy's assassination. But from the very beginning, the news media have gone out of their way to hide various facts of the truth. And not to mention, the FBI and the CIA have done the same thing. They have colluded together to hide the truth. And we could go on and on and on, but I won't bore you now. I will move to something new from the People's Voice. USAID orders staff to shred and burn, that's in quotes, shred and burn all evidence of criminal wrongdoing. March 11, 2025, from the People's Voice, Sean Eddie Tabatabai. Politico obtained an email from a senior official at USAID, that's the United States Agency for International Development, and I'm interjecting myself a lot tonight, but I think it's worth it. I'll interject the fact that decades ago, I had always heard that that was a CIA front, the Agency for International Development. But again, it says, Politico obtained an email from a senior official at USAID ordering staffers to convene at the agency's former headquarters on Tuesday to destroy all remaining documents by either shredding or burning them. The GatewayPundit.com reports USAID's acting executive secretary, Erica Carr, told the staff to meet at the RRB 14th Street lobby to shred, quote, as many documents first, and reserve the burn bags for when the shredder becomes unavailable or needs a break, unquote. Carr also ordered staff to label the burn bags with the words secret. And USAID/B/IO/ in dark Sharpie, if possible. She also said to make sure the burn bags did not overfill and to close them with staples at the top. This means classified documents will be and are being burned. And then it gives the actual email in her own words, a copy of that. A former USAID official confirmed to Politico that the email was real and said he had, quote, never seen something like this, unquote. I've never seen something like this en masse. Everyone with a safe is supposed to keep it up to date and destroy documents when they no longer need to be stored. Sometimes security will check your safe and tell you if you have to clean out old material. NBC News reported that groups challenging the Trump administration's efforts to shutter AID, USAID, have filed an emergency motion to stop this destruction immediately. And it goes on to talk about that. NBC News notes that U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols, who was appointed by Trump, is presiding over the case and has yet to rule on the request not to destroy the files. Both sides have been ordered to file a status report on the motion by tomorrow morning and a schedule for moving forward. Well, we'll see what happens with that. It's a little hard to be sure from this article whether the ones who want the agency terminated are doing the burning and shredding, or whether it's the ones who want to keep it. Again, that's from the People's Voice. USAID orders staff to shred and burn all evidence of criminal wrongdoing. March 11, 2025. All right. Now a little bit about the ubiquitous topic of COVID. And let me take this chance to mention again, if you want to see some of our past articles, I need to bring them up to date, but we have some very good ones in there. Go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and you can see a tribute to Elizabeth, my late wife, and colleague here at the radio show. And you can see some various other facts. And this coming week, being the first week of April, we'll be going back to a one-night-a-week format. It will be a Thursday evenings. You can hear us either by going to WWCR.com, and I think it's transmitter 3, but you can see when you get there and listen live. You can listen live on shortwave radio at the same frequency we've had Thursdays all along, 4.840 megahertz. And, of course, you can go to our archives. So that time and day is not convenient. You can always wait a couple of days, and if all goes well, the programs will be up to date by probably Friday or Saturday in most cases. And you can just go to our archives at our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Now, as far as COVID, we still have a few copies. I guess I should say I. My wife was very proud of the book, and I think she was deservedly proud. I helped out with it. Some of the essays in it I wrote. But I think the biggest part of the book really was her creation. And as I say, she was justifiably proud in putting out the book. It's an attractive book, not cheap, has color pictures, and is free. If you just write to me, Lou Caverly, LouCaverly, write to Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. If you didn't get that, and you don't already have it written down from the past, I'll read that again in a few minutes. But that book is available. We do ask, if it's not too hard on you, if you can send a little money to cover the postage, we'd be grateful. Well, again, I'd be grateful. And I'd be happy to send that to anyone who requests it. If you need a couple of copies, if you've got somebody that you know will value it, not just put it in the trash, but will actually read it and absorb what's in it, that would be great. And again, you can get that just by writing to me, Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and the post office box is P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, spelled the same way, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And needless to say, if you can make a little contribution to help us stay in the air, that would be very desirable as well. We thank you ahead of time for that. I got a letter a day or two ago from a listener who received a copy of the book from me and praised it, saying how good it was. So that's really heartening. A lot of people have said they really, really liked the book and that it was filled with very valuable information, a kind of a history of the COVID. Well, I don't know if I'd call it a hoax, but I'm tempted to. Well, on that line, here's an article from WorldNet Daily. Egregious abuse. School secretly forces teen to get COVID shot and now faces the music. This is by Bob Unruh, March 25th, 2025. The Supreme Court in North Carolina has determined that a public school system that, without permission from the student or his parents, and without informing the parents, forcibly gave a 14-year-old boy the COVID-19 shot, can be sued for its abuse. Liberty Counsel has battled in court over many of the COVID-19 mandates that were fabricated by government and corporate officials during the time the China virus was attacking America's population. And its chief, that is the chief of Liberty Counsel, Matt Staver, said, quote, no law can preempt the U.S. Constitution. The PrEP Act does not authorize a forced injection of an experimental shot, which is an egregious abuse of power and a constitutional violation. The North Carolina Supreme Court has rightly ruled that Emily Haples' case involving her son, Tanner Smith, can move forward. Parents have the longstanding right to direct the upbringing of their children and the right to make medical decisions on their behalf, unquote. While the medical establishment during COVID belittled the possibility that approved products such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine could mitigate the virus, and they promoted the experimental mRNA shots that have since proven to have delivered side effects up to and including death, millions of Americans were forced by the government or their employers to take the shots, providing billions of dollars in revenue for the drug companies. Liberty Counsel reported the case at hand reversed state trial court and appeals court rulings that, quote, considered state actors who forcibly vaccinated a child as protected under a federal health emergency law, unquote. The ruling means the lawsuit over the school's actions now will move forward in a trial court. It was Mother Emily Happel, who sued Guilford County Board of Education and Old North State Medical Society in August 2022, alleging battery and infringement of state constitutional rights after her son, Tanner Smith, forcibly received a dose of Pfizer's COVID shot against his wishes and without parental consent, the organization confirmed. Smith had reported to a school clinic to be tested after a COVID-19 cluster was detected among players on the Western Guilford High School football team. Quote, and this is a quote from Liberty Counsel, according to the details of the case, his stepfather drove him to the school clinic and waited outside. The family had been informed by the school via letter that the school clinic only offered COVID-19 tests. They were not told that the experimental COVID shots were being administered on site. When inside, healthcare workers attempted to inject Tanner. He told the workers he didn't want the injection, and he also lacked the required signed parental consent, a consent form to get such a shot, Liberty Counsel reported. Clinic workers allegedly tried to call his mother, but failed to consider contacting his stepfather, who was waiting nearby, and ignored protests from Tanner. Lower courts incorrectly assumed the 2005 Federal Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, the so-called PREP Act, shielded the school district and medical provider from any liability. They claimed the individuals and organizations were, quote, fully immunized, unquote, against lawsuits, but now have found out differently. North Carolina Chief Justice Paul Newby wrote the decision and said the immunity protections were to protect against claims of, quote, loss, unquote, but that there's no suggestion in the law Congress intended to, quote, block state constitutional claims, unquote. Justice Newby, in fact, cited the school's actions as creating problems with the right for parents to control their child's upbringing, the right to refuse forced, non-mandatory medical treatment, and the right for a mother to make medical decisions on behalf of her child. So that's good news. We all remember a few years back, not very many years back, that these so-called safe and effective vaccines were being forced upon many people. We have a doctor, an anonymous doctor who supports us here at this radio show, who lost his job because of this high-handed and blatantly unethical behavior by a hospital because he refused the shots. And many people had to choose between feeding their families or losing their jobs because these shots that were neither safe nor effective were forced upon people. Again, if you want our book, it tells a lot more about all these matters. Just write to me, Lou Carefully, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. All you have to do is just say, please send me your book, and I'll get it right in the mail to you. Make sure you give your complete address. Okay, and that, by the way, was from WorldNet Daily. The title was Egregious Abuse, School Secretly Forces Teen to Get COVID Shot, by Bob Unruh, March 25th of this year. Now, we're going back to the Gateway Pundit. Great news. Trump Energy Department rolling back Biden administration's regulations on home appliances. This is by Mike LaChance, March 26th. Over the last 4 years, the Biden administration repeatedly tried to control what kinds of home appliances Americans would be allowed to buy. They tried to outright ban gas stoves. Then they denied it and mocked anyone who suggested this was happening. Then the Biden administration was caught working with outside groups to do just that. Now all that is finally changing. Check out this tweet from the Trump Energy Department. And here's a quote from that tweet. U.S. Secretary of Energy Chris Wright today announced the Department of Energy, DOE, has further postponed the implementation of three of the Biden-Harris administration's restrictive mandates on home appliances. These actions, taken in accordance with President Donald Trump's executive order named Unleashing Prosperity Through Deregulation, marks a key step in lowering costs, enhancing performance, and expanding options for American consumers. And it has much more, but again, if you want to read that, go to the Gateway Pundit, March 26th, and the headline reads, Great News, Trump Energy Department Rolling Back Biden Administration's Regulations on Home Appliances. Okay, a little different kind of topic here. Something in the natural world from the week. Six dangerous volcanoes that could shut down the world. In the subtitle, The Earth is in for a Fiery Future. This is a lengthy thing. I think this runs to about five or six pages. So I'll just read a few of the highlights. And what it lists is these six volcanoes that could be pretty devastating. Some of them I've never heard of. Some of them are quite famous. And I don't seem to have a date for this. The date may have gotten chopped off when I copied it, but it is from the week. The first one is from Italy, Campi Flegre. And I probably massacred the name, but it's C-A-M-P-I. F-L-E-G-R-E-I, and it says, located just east of Naples, Campi Flegre is not just a single volcano, but a volcanic system containing 24 craters. If it were to erupt, it could, quote, cover Naples and surrounding areas in ash, trigger earthquakes and landslides throughout southern Italy, as well as cause widespread air pollution and acid rain, said Wanted in Rome. That must be the title of a book or article, Wanted in Rome. Now, we may not have too much to fear because its largest eruption occurred 36,000 years ago and, quote, pumped ash across the Mediterranean region and spawned a bitter volcanic winter across Eastern Europe with temperatures reduced by up to 9 degrees Celsius, which is 16 degrees Fahrenheit, said the BBC. And that's a long time ago, 36,000 years, but it does say Camp Flegre experienced a 4.4 magnitude earthquake in March 2025. However, there has been, quote, no type of process that gives us a sign of imminent eruption, unquote. Skipping down to the second one, here's one I think we've all heard of, Mount Vesuvius, also in Italy. Its last eruption was not so long ago, 1944. And it's famous, of course, for wiping out the cities of Pompeii and Herculaneum in 79 AD. And it would do much greater damage if it erupted today. And here's something I never knew. Quote, given its potential, Vesuvius could endanger more than 3 million people and wipe out the city of Naples, said How Stuff Works. The region also has a squatter dilemma, with over 700,000 people residing illegally on its slopes, who would be at risk. And Vesuvius's next eruption will likely be an incredibly forceful explosion, marked by flying rock and ash at speeds of up to almost 100 miles per hour. And the scientists say Vesuvius likely won't have a major eruption again for a few hundred years. Well, we'll see. The third one is in the Canary Islands, Cumbre Vieja. I guess is how you say that, C-U-M-B-R-E-V-I-E-J-A. And it last erupted in 2021, just 4 years ago. A lava poured out of the volcano ridge and flowed to the sea, engulfing 3,000-plus dwellings, said NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And I'll skip down now. The likelihood of it happening, scientists say the, quote, year-to-year probability, unquote, of a major eruption is low. But preparation should be taken anyway, given the potentially cataclysmic damage. And then one, I remember this happening. I'm old enough to remember this. Some of you are too. Mount St. Helens in Washington State in the United States last erupted in 1920. And it says, Mount St. Helens eruption in May 1980. Did I say 1920? If I did, I was wrong. 1980. Resulted in 57 deaths and caused the largest landslide in recorded history, said NASA. It added, hot pressurized magma erupted, and the ash plume reached a towering height of 80,000 feet, or 15 miles, before blanketing the surrounding region, said Earth's Sky. Everything within approximately 230 square miles was destroyed and required extensive recovery. In the decades since the eruption, Mount St. Helens has given scientists an unprecedented opportunity to witness the intricate steps through which life reclaims a devastated landscape. And the likelihood of it happening again, while Mount St. Helens is expected to erupt again in our lifetimes, quote, neither a large debris avalanche nor a major lateral blast like those of May 18th, 1980 is likely now that a deep crater has formed, said the U.S. Geological Survey. And a couple of others. Well, I think our time is running out here. We have Popocatépetl in Mexico, ongoing since the early 2000s. And we have the Yellowstone supervolcano, one of our very generous supporters was talking to me about that on the phone not so long ago. The Yellowstone supervolcano is been giving off some steam and little vents. Does that mean there's going to be a major eruption? If so, it could be devastating. Well, that's an interesting article. You may want to look at that. Just go to what I did to find it was just go to Yellowstone Supervolcano, and it appeared in the publication The Week. And I'm sorry they don't have a date for it, but it shouldn't be hard to find if you want to look that up. Well, looks like our time is up for today. Thank you for listening. Again, check out our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. If you want to write to me, it's Luke Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you and good night.